opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffered the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. And always the message is others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. If you're listening to our Thursday live internet show, please join Heidi and me and our guests on the show by calling our toll-free number 1-866-472-5792 with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. These shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites, and they're brought to you by the Open View Hope Foundation. All shows can now be downloaded on iTunes, and transcripts can be accessed on thegriefblog.com. Well, good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Mom.
It's back to school time for a lot of people, or just getting ready to go back. Can be a really difficult time for families, can it?
Well, I think so, because it brings up a lot of memories. And also you see children going off to school, and it brings up a lot of things that you did when your children were alive. So
yeah.
I think it is. I think it can be really hard for people.
And a lot of pressure of organizing and getting things ready and, you know, maybe having to do things or maybe not having a child that's going back to school. It can be very tough.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also I think when you're getting your children ready that are living, mm-hmm. it makes you think of the children that you've had that have died.
Right.
That can be bittersweet.
Or if somebody has a mom or dad who's died, it can be really a tough time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And a sibling, if you're going back to a school where your sibling went.
Oh, that's a really good point, I think. I mean, I know that when Scott's dad, Heather, was going to the same high school, she was about to go to the same high school, and that was hard. I mean, that was bittersweet, like I said, because all his friends were there.
Right, exactly. Well, I just wanted to mention an email we had from Sky on thegriefblog.com. Hope you are all going on it, and remember that our shows are archived on there. We got an email from Sky, which I thought was, you know, very heart-rending, talking about her 10-year-old daughter. She died of cancer on July of 2007, and she is feeling, so it's just been a year for her. We know that's really tough. A lot of times people feel like that first year, you know, they've gotten through it, and now things should be better, and when they're not, it's discouraging. So we want Sky to hang in there. She says that the loneliness is unbearable, and she feels like she has very little support. You know, Sky, you really need to reach out, doesn't she, Heidi, like she is now with sending us a note on the grief blog?
Absolutely, and sometimes for some people, not for all people, but going into the second year can feel even harder. Because the numbness and shock have worn off, reality is setting in, and it can be a really difficult time for people.
Her little daughter died of leukemia, so she was taking care of her. So it can be rough, and it could be, you've got to prepare yourself that the going back to school thing can be tough. And if you don't have other kids, you may want to do something around that time, be with people that you particularly enjoy, or do some kind of an activity that is soothing for you. Well, I just want to remind people to go to the Open to Hope Foundation. We have got some wonderful new writers on there, Fran Dorf, Bob Bauer, Neil Chethick, and we're looking for other authors, and we're hoping to have over 300 authors by the first of the year to give wonderful information to you about grief and loss and things that you can do. So the foundation is going very well. Well, Heidi, I want to talk a little bit about our guests today before they come on. Our first segment is going to be Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen, who have written an inspiring account of their sister-in-law Diane's five-year struggle with cancer. It's a really amazing story and about in-laws and how in-laws deal with the loss of loved ones. And then our second guest is going to be Susan Reddick. Her husband died in 9/11. He was in one of the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center. and she went on to raise money for Widows of Afghanistan. Very interesting story. But I think the counterpoint of these stories is interesting, isn't it, Heidi? One family losing someone to cancer, a five-year struggle, and then one immediate death. So for our audience out there, are there some differences in those kind of situations out there, Heidi?
Absolutely, but I think both of them are difficult in their own for their own reasons. But it is different, like you said. There are differences.
And then it's interesting. This is the first time we've had in-laws on, which I'm very happy about.
I know this is going to be an interesting show because, like you said, we have not done any shows on in-laws up until this point.
Right. Exactly. Well, would you like to introduce them, Heidi?
Sure, I'd be honored to. So, as you said, Mom, in this first segment, our guests are Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen. And our topic is the death of a sister-in-law. Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen, authors of Living Consciously, Dying Gracefully, A Journey with Cancer and Beyond, give us the inspiring account of the last 5 years in the life of their sister-in-law, Diane Manahan. Nancy and Becky will discuss how dealing with Diane's loss has impacted their lives. Welcome to the show, Nancy and Becky.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. It's great to have you on. I wondered if, Nancy... it's your brother's, Diane was your sister-in-law, right?
That's right, my
and
brother
Becky.
Bill's wife.
Right. And was one of you like to tell us about Nancy, I mean about Diane?
Diane was a nurse and a professor of nursing at Minnesota State University in Mankato. She was also a therapist and one of the most fully alive people that I've ever met. My brother and she started dating when they were in the sixth grade. And so I met them when I was in the first grade. I met Diane, and I think fell in love with her at the same time my brother did.
That's great. And how about you, Becky? What was your experience? How long did you know Diane?
Well, I'm Nancy's partner, and so when I got into the relationship with Nancy back in '94, that's when I first met Diane. So I had known her only a year before she was diagnosed with cancer.
Uh-huh. So you've got a different perspective on it, which is interesting. Well, I wanted to just mention a little bit about the book before we get going along too much, because it's a very interesting book, and I think one of the things that our audience out there would be interested in getting this book, and I highly recommend that you do this, is not only to look at your future if you happen to have, if you have someone who has cancer or has a terminal illness or is fighting some kind of an illness. It's very inspiring to hear how Diane lived with cancer. And I love that. Didn't she say that she lived with cancer? She wasn't dying with cancer, right?
That's right. She was very clear about that.
Yeah, I love that. She wasn't dying of cancer. She was living with cancer. I love that reframe.
Yeah. So, for people who need it from that point of view, for our audience who have already had a loss, I will have to say that it fascinated me because you ladies did such a full life about her. I mean, it tells about her journey through it and wonderful journals. But also, you do a genogram of family history. You have comments in there about what friends said about her. You have suggestions for people about holding memorial services. You have all sorts of things going on in here in the book that could be helpful for people if they want to look at some rituals and things, but also if they would like to write a book about their loved one that has already passed away. I think it's a wonderful outline for that, don't you, Heidi?
Absolutely, or have a celebration, a life celebration for someone that's already died.
Yeah, we'll talk about that life, the life celebration, and everything. Diane was pretty remarkable. She was in the Peace Corps. Her husband's a doctor, right?
Right.
And they traveled all over in the Peace Corps and whatever. Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about in connection with this book, in there you talk about how Diane died at home, and taking care of the body and doing all those kinds of things, which I thought was interesting because I know some of our audience out there would have had requests from their loved one to die at home, but they weren't able to pull it off, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's amazing that you were able to do this. Do you think it would be hard to do this if you hadn't had a brother who was a doctor and Diane was a nurse and had planned for it? And, you know, what's your thought on that?
Well, that certainly was a factor that my brother is a physician, and Diane was a nurse, and so they were pretty familiar with end stages of life and some of the issues. And Diane said that if she needed to go to the hospital, that was fine. But families without medical professionals in them usually have the option of hospice, and hospice performs the same function. They can be on top of pain medication and give support to family members, emotional support as well as physical and medical support. So I think that today, now that hospice is so widely available, most families have the option of trying to have a death at home, if that is possible medically.
Becky, do you think there was any time when did you or other people get a little nervous? And because I know some families are like think they're going to have them die at home, and then you know it's hard.
You know, I don't think anyone ever felt nervous. I think one of the things was that they were so well prepared and so grounded in the reality of what was happening that they just, in a way, they kind of created their own reality. They were prepared for the death, and they had talked extensively about it. And they just took the steps that were needed. And they always left open the option that if the pain got out of control, you know, that she would go into a hospital or hospice, or mm-hmm. or they would always have a backup plan. But
well, I think it's great that there were these support people available, and hopefully for our audience out there, they were able to get the support they wanted to. But unfortunately, I think as Diane would know if she were here, being a nurse, some people don't have that.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hurt and angry, and we understand that if they weren't able to do what they wanted to do. The other issue can come up with where you don't have family solidarity, where one person thinks that they should go and one person mm-hmm. thinks that they should stay home, and, you know, a lot of issues there. Well, it's time for us to come up on break, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley, and we're talking to Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen, authors of Living Consciously and Dying Gracefully, A Journey with Cancer and Beyond, and they are in-laws of, oh my goodness, Diane Bohan. Well, please stay tuned for more, and remember that you can reach us through griefblog.com, and all these shows can be downloaded on iTunes.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on PCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking today with Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen about the death of a sister-in-law. Welcome back to the show, Nancy, Becky, and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, when we went from break, we were talking about the fact that Diane was able to die at home with the family. And I wanted to get into the last part of the book, After Diane Died. You guys had some pretty amazing experiences. Do you want to talk to our audience about that?
Sure. I'll share one experience that I had. It was just at the moment of passing. The Celtics call these places thin places, where that veil between this world and the next is very thin. And as Diane died in bed with the family surrounding her, I stepped back from the bed after a while. And I read about people's spirits rising and looking down on the scene and so forth. So I looked up to the ceiling and I was giving Diane the thumbs up, like, you did it, you died, you had really wanted to die these last few weeks, and you felt you were lingering and you just couldn't do it, but you did it. And I looked up, and right above her, I saw what I call a portal, this round hole, and I saw these three ancient beings. Some people would call them angels. I'm not sure what name to give them. But they just kept looking down on the scene, and it was the most incredible moment of my life to experience something like that that I never knew had happened or could happen. I have since found out that sometimes people do see this kind of veil being pulled back.
Well, it's amazing when you talk about it in the book, because it's like, wow, and you wanted to tell everybody around you, look, can't you see it? But they were busy with her body.
They were, and it was, and part of me just thought, well, if I say anything and no one else sees this, am I nuts? It's very interesting, with the times that we've been in bookstores or giving talks and so forth, oftentimes people will come up afterwards and share a story about a communication with their loved one, or seeing something like this when that veil is pulled back. And they said, I just never share this with anyone because, it just sounds too crazy.
That's amazing. And how about you, Nancy? You had an experience too, didn't you?
Well, I did, but I want to say something else first, which is, I think one of the most important parts of the grieving experience is for people to know that these events, these thin places, are possible, so that they can be open to the tremendous comfort and reassurance and love that can be coming from the other side.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about your experience.
Actually, Nancy didn't have an experience.
Didn't you have it? Were you the one that had the smell?
That also was...
Oh, that was you too?
Yeah.
I thought it was Nancy.
Well,
okay.
No.
Yeah, there was a smell, and that really triggered something for me, because I know... when we talk to our audience, there's a lot with smell and with, experiences.
Yeah,
many people.
The situation was that Nancy and a few other close, intimate friends of Diane's washed her body, and they washed it with lavender oil in the water. And I didn't participate in that, thinking that, I really was not an intimate of Diane's. And I kind of felt bad about that. And when I drove home that evening back to Minneapolis from Mankato, when I walked in the back door, the hallway was filled with the smell of lavender. It was so incredibly intense, and I thought, right away, Diane. And I just felt her presence, and I felt this sense of glee that she had, that she was just able to zip all over the universe, and she was free, and it was just a fabulous moment. And then about half a minute later, my right brain kicked in, and I thought, no, or my left brain kicked in, and I thought, no, this can't be real. We must have a broken bottle of lavender oil someplace in the house. I ran downstairs and all over, and there wasn't. We didn't even own any. And so it was. And when I came back to the back door, that smell was gone.
You know, it's amazing how we deny our experience, isn't it? Very quickly for a lot of people.
I've had that experience with my father-in-law is dead, and he died about 5 years ago, and I've smelled Old Spice very strongly before in places he's been, and that's what he always wore.
Uh-huh.
So it is. It's powerful to have these experiences. Right?
I think some of the most common ways that there is that communication are smells, sounds, like a favorite song or a bird, a sense of touch even. Sometimes people feel as if they are being touched, a hand on a shoulder, a hand on a back, a voice, a message, whether they hear it in their head. And some of the stories in our book, for instance, Diane's, one of her best friends is a therapist, and she says sometimes during therapy she hears Diane's voice. It's not anybody else's voice. It's Diane's voice giving her some guidance on what to do.
Wow.
Hmm. Wonderful.
So we love those stories. And, in fact,
absolutely.
We were inspired to write this book by Janice Amatuzio's book, Forever Ours, Stories of Life and Immortality from a Forensic Scientist. Janice Amatuzio is a physician here in the Minneapolis area who has interviewed many, many families after their loved ones have died and had these incredible experience of post-death communication.
Right, and my mom and I also interviewed a man named Bill Guggenheim who wrote a book called Hello from Heaven where, similarly, people have told amazing stories about communications like this.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful book, too, Heidi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like
Maybe
that.
You'll want to shoot the name of that book to us, and we can put it on our website. Maybe even see if we can have her on the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I like about this book is that you have chronicled those, and when you do that, then it stops that left brain from denying those experiences,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
you kind of got them down there. It's really quite wonderful. I want to talk before we end about your memorial service, your life celebration, because I feel like that's was really wonderful that you did with Diane, and she actually planned it, but I believe that even now, if you've had a loved one die a year ago, you could do one of these wonderful life celebrations. Is one of you want to talk about that a bit?
That's true, Gloria. Diane planned her own service in detail, but anybody can take her plan and modify it and use it for their own loved ones, no matter how long it's been since they died. And one of the things that Diane did was to involve as many people as possible in the funeral. For instance, she asked me a month before she died if I would be willing to read a Mary Oliver poem that I had sent her on a card. And that was such a powerful experience for me to be sitting there on the sofa beside Diane, holding her hand and having her say, Nancy, would you read, I love that poem, would you read that at my life celebration? I mean, how many people ever have the opportunity to talk to their loved one who is dying about what they want
right. And
to have that personal request?
And I like the idea of serving. You can serve the food that the person that you have died, the person liked, dead now, serve the food that they liked at the life celebration.
Oh, that's right, Heidi. And also a year later, we had an anniversary party at which we dedicated the memorial that our family chose. And it isn't in a cemetery. Diane was cremated. It was a very green funeral. But they chose a natural, unpolished rock, local rock from southern Minnesota, and it's in the public park in her hometown so that people can sit on it. There's a bench portion, and kids can climb all over it. In fact, there's a picture in the book of Bill and Diane's four grandchildren climbing on this rock.
Mm-hmm.
And at
that
people had a chance to, as you say, Heidi, sometimes the second year is harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so people had a chance to share how they were with the grieving process, including Diane and Bill's four children and Bill himself, and kind of have a wonderful one. No, I don't think people think of doing that, a one-year or a two-year ceremony. And then we all went back to their house and served all of Diane's favorite foods and had a wonderful time remembering and talking and laughing and crying.
I was kind of laughing in the book because you made some comment about the all the food may not have been that healthy.
Yes. Coffee, ice cream, yes, exactly.
we didn't have any spinach.
I love the fact that she felt that having a good sense of humor was important, too.
Well, it was fun food. Dan had a wicked and wonderful sense of humor. And, in fact, the very last quote that we have from her journal in the book, which is full of wonderful quotes from her private journals, which she typed out and put with her medical papers, as if she knew someone was going to write a book. But we didn't even get the idea to write a book until 3 years after she died, and it was because of reading Dr. Amatuzio's that we thought, hey, we've had these experiences with Diane. But the last thing in her journal that we quote in the book is her philosophy, her whole life philosophy. And it says, to treat people with dignity, whether I agree with them or not, to give reverence to nature and creation, to err with some grace and humor, which reminds me that one of the goals for her life before she was diagnosed, for her birthday when she was 55 that same year, was to every day to
slip up a little.
Oh, thank you, Becky.
Yes.
To slip up a little and to do something outrageous a little, knowing that I and others are so human. So she really embraced her humanity. And then the last thing, Gloria, as you pointed out, is to maintain and share my sense of fun.
Oh, that's great. Well, could you tell folks how they can get the book? And you do have a website, right?
Our website is Nanbeck, N-A-N, the first three letters of my name, Nancy, and B-E-C, the first three letters of Becky's name, .com, so nanbeck.com. The book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and in any bookstore, especially independent bookstores, which we like to support in your hometown.
Great. And you can also get it off of thegriefblog.com. Well, Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen, thank you so much for being on the show. And you are fabulous sisters-in-law, and it's just wonderful.
Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thanks, Nancy and Becky.
You're doing a wonderful work. Thank you so much for what you do to help people cope with grief and loss.
Thank you.
Thanks for your book.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria. And for those of you just joining us, we're talking today with Nancy Manahan and Becky Bowen about the death of a sister-in-law. Nancy and Becky are authors of Living Consciously, Dying Gracefully, A Journey with Cancer and Beyond. Welcome back to the show, Nancy, Becky, and Gloria.
Thank you, Heidi.
Hi, Heidi. Well, welcome back. We weren't sure we were going to have you for our second segment, but it looks like our second guest isn't going to show up. So we are very happy to have you on because it's a great show, and I know our audience is getting a lot out of it. We're talking to sister-in-laws about the death of their sister, Diane Bohan.
Manahan.
Bonahan. And we were just talking a little bit when we went to break about the things that are in the book about her sense of humor and about her life. I want to talk a little bit about her life. She did some interesting things, didn't she? The Peace Corps.
Yes, Bill and my Diane and my brother Bill were in the Peace Corps in Malaysia for 2 years, and then they re-upped at the end of that and went to West Africa. And when they were there, I happened to be just graduating from college. I'm 6 years younger than they are, and they invited me to come and live with them in between my undergraduate and graduate schools. And so I actually lived in Ghana, in Accra, the capital, with Diane and Bill, and I think maybe that cemented our relationship. And it was when Diane became maybe a sister-in-law, certainly, but also a very, very close friend.
Could you talk a little bit about her bout with cancer and about how did you find out and what was your take on that as a family member?
Oh, Gloria, that's kind of hard to talk about, but she did everything right. You know, she was an athlete, a marathon runner, very healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, annual mammograms, and it was just 6 months after her annual mammogram that during a shower, which is so often what happens, she felt a lump and went in and had it biopsied, and it was cancer. And when they went in to do the lumpectomy to remove it, they discovered that it had spread to the lymph nodes. So immediately she had metastatic breast cancer that had spread.
And she was in her late 50s or mid-50s,
yeah,
right?
She was 55 when that happened.
She lived with cancer 5.5 years, didn't she?
She did, even though it was a very aggressive form.
Wow.
And that's one of the other helpful things about the book. If anyone knows someone with cancer, which I think at this point we all do,
mm-hmm.
Her whole protocol for complementary and alternative therapies for cancer are detailed in the book, which she did along with conventional chemotherapy and radiation. And as a result, she believed, of those alternative and complementary therapies, she had a very high quality of life during that whole 5.5 year period. She never got sick. She never got chemo brain. She never was exhausted. She never even lost her hair, which her oncologist said was unheard of.
I was going to say, I've never heard of that before.
She was able to continue teaching at the university. Her
blood. She taught right up to the end, which was quite an amazing thing.
And she had energy. She and my brother went to Norway for their 35th wedding anniversary. This was 2 years before she died, and hiked the fjords. So she had an incredibly good life quality during those 5.5 years.
So she chose to embrace life to its fullest, even though she knew that she had serious cancer.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Oh, and another reason she was able to do that, you may remember that every year she and my brother had this habit, or actually I think they did it every 6 months, of asking themselves, if we knew we were going to die in a year, what would we change?
Oh, it's like the bucket list.
That's it, the bucket list.
I love that.
And they really took that question seriously and made course corrections, mm-hmm. either very small, like my brother saying one time, oh, Diane, I'm really happy with our marriage and my work and the family and our community involvement, but there is one thing I would change if I knew I was going to die in a year. And she said, well, what is that, Bill? He said, I wouldn't go to the symphony with you anymore. And she said, well, fine, you don't have to. I thought you enjoyed it, too. I'll just go with my friends.
Now, tell me, as a sister-in-law, how did it impact you when you found out that you had breast cancer?
Well, first of all, let me say that Becky and I were the lucky recipients of that course correction, because then she would invite us to go to the symphony with her.
Right.
But how it impacted me, Gloria, when I heard that she was diagnosed with cancer, I had an intuitive, dreadful certainty that she would not survive it. And so during that whole 5.5 years, I was grieving, I think, because even though I would try to say with my logical brain, no, cancer is no longer a death sentence, this doesn't have to be, and she was in remission for 3 years, a deeper intuitive level of me, I think, if that's possible, knew that, that she would die of this breast cancer.
Now, do you feel that, I was thinking of in-laws, do you feel that there's any kind of disenfranchisement? Heidi and I see that with, say, grandparents or siblings, or, you know, there can be some level where you have to support, say, your brother and can't deal with your own grief, or, you know, kind of not allowed to.
You're also where your loss is not acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. By the world.
Becky, do you want to address that? Or?
Well, I think that Diane made such an effort to include everyone that, I don't know, I think we've, speaking for myself, I felt as much a part of the event as was comfortable for me and as I wanted to be, and certainly Nancy played such a pivotal role in Diane's dying, being there, holding her while she died. I don't feel that we were excluded in any way. In fact, I really felt that we were embraced.
And Diane herself set the standard for that by inviting friends and family members, including me, to go with her to every single chemotherapy or radiation appointment so that we were involved in the process.
How right many people went along? That's kind of amazing.
Someone different every time.
Well, and it's amazing that people chose to go along, because sometimes people don't want to be part of that.
They always had the option of saying no, but mm-hmm. I don't know if Diane invited anyone who didn't welcome the opportunity to spend a couple of hours of really quality one-on-one time while she was just sitting there having the drip.
Right.
We could really talk then.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that helped do is normalize what she was going through. I mean, this was a disease she was dealing with, it, and it was part of her life. It certainly wasn't her whole life, and she didn't allow it to consume her. And so it just, in a way, it kind of reflected when she died. It was just a very natural family event, and so she helped, you know, set the stage for treating both mm-hmm. her terminal illness and her dying in a way that just seems so natural for all of us.
You know, it sounds like you all got along pretty well. I mean, there could be a situation where family members don't get along that well and come together.
That's true.
We were a very, very lucky family in that there weren't, as you mentioned earlier, disagreements about how things should happen.
And what about the grieving process after her death? How has that been? And what do you think has helped you to heal?
Writing the book?
Bingo. Absolutely. We laughed and cried our way through writing this book. And just reading over her medical records, reading through her journals, oh, what a privilege. And thinking about her and interviewing her sister, her only sister, and their four children and their spouses.
Now, did you interview them on tape or
we did?
Notes?
Yeah, we made tapes, and we tried to do it in person whenever possible. So, if one of her best friends lives in California, and when he came to Minnesota to run a marathon, then we interviewed him when he was here in Minnesota.
Now, tell our audience, did you have an outline, or what would they do?
Well, you know, it started out just being a collection of stories of the after-death communication with her, and then we realized that the story was, you know, much greater than what we had first envisioned, because, you know, once Bill gave us her journals and medical records and so forth, it was incredible material, and her voice in her journals was extraordinary. So we thought, you know, this all has got to be in there. So at that point, we made an outline and started using that, and just to cover the various parts of her journey.
But we recommend any family member, as you can see, it wasn't her husband or one of her children or his sister who did the book. It was people in the next layer, level of closeness in the family. But we interviewed her sister, who was the first person we interviewed, and she said that it was the most helpful thing for dealing with her own grief. And this wasn't until 3 years after Diane had died. But, you know, people move on and they don't talk about it, or they're not think they're not supposed to talk about their grief, because you know you're supposed to get over your grief in a year or a year and a half, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not how it works, of course, as you well know. And so giving these people who were the closest to Diane a chance to talk about her and their experience of her death brought out so many stories that no one had heard yet, and was a really important part for us. We cried during every single interview, and the person who was interviewed cried. In fact, I'm tearing up right now just remembering it. It was so powerful, Gloria and Heidi, that if any of your listeners have any inclination, not to write a book to publish it, but maybe just to put a few stories together in a nice little format that they can have bound at Kinko's and just share among the family, it's so healing.
Now, I know on page 200 of your book, you've got the appendix, list of people mentioned and their relationship to Diane. And when you look through them, it's like John Glick, husband of Diane's friend Susie Simons, a professional potter living in Michigan. I mean, so it's like you can interview anybody.
That's right.
I mean, what fun.
And right now I'm looking at a piece of pottery, a beautiful bowl that John Glick made, which held the water that we put the oil of lavender in when we washed Diane's body. So everyone has some little or big connection.
Yeah, and it would give you an opportunity, if it was a child, to go back and interview teachers, tutors, you know, whatever, if it's something that you want to do. Not every family member would want to do this, or would maybe be comfortable, but I think a lot of our audience would be.
But even if one family member were doing it, it would involve everybody else. And what a gift to everyone in the family and connect and the family friends.
And one of the things it does, too, is that it keeps these stories alive. And you know, we felt, you know, after 3-4 years, we were starting to get fuzzy on the details of what happened. And so it was going back and talking to people that, you know, we started developing a better sense of what happened and just getting it down. And, you know, we're so glad that we didn't wait any longer than we did.
When did you write the book? How many years after, you may have said this, but how many years after Diane died did you write the book?
We started writing it in 2005, and the year before we had started collecting the stories.
So we were interviewing people 3 years after she died.
3 years after she died.
And then started doing the writing a year after that.
So it took you 4 years to get the book out, or five?
Three, yeah. From 2004 to 2007.
So like you said, it can be years later that you decide to do a book.
Absolutely.
You go back and interview people about their memories.
And people were thrilled to have the opportunity to discuss those memories and share them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them they hadn't ever shared before.
I think it would be wonderful to get that perspective. I was thinking if you had a child die, you could even have some of their artwork or, you know, whatever in it.
I said it again, Mom.
She's on? I think our next guest is on now, so when we come back from break, we'll discuss a little bit with Susan Reddick about the children of the work that she did with widows in Afghanistan. And we want to again thank you two ladies for being on the show for an extra 15 minutes, and it's wonderful to hear more about Diane and her story, and I would highly recommend that people get this book.
And Libby, a lot of this information is available free for download on our website.
Oh, yeah, give us your website for that. You want to give us your website again?
It's Nanbeck, N-A-N-B-E-C, as in Becky, nanbeck.com.
So you can get some of this information. And I will tell you, if you do have someone in your family, or if you have a terminal illness, or you're living with some illness that could potentially be terminal, this is a wonderful book for you to get also from that point of view, because it's got things in here about alternative treatments, what Diane did, what she ate, her philosophy of life, her journal, all sorts of things that can help you if you are struggling with that kind of issue.
And an annotated bibliography of resources.
Right. So it's a treasure trove. And also, if you're thinking about doing it, I like to hold the fact that it took you guys you didn't start it for 3 years, and it took you 3 years to write it, to finish
it? That's
right. So don't get discouraged about your book. You know, they're long-term processes. Well, thank you so much again for being on the show, Nancy and Becky. It was great. You're delightful ladies, and what a wonderful thing you've done.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Gloria. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and our topic in this segment is after 9/11, the death of a husband, and our guest is Susan Reddick. Susan's husband was killed in one of the airplanes which crashed into the World Trade Center on 9/11. As part of her healing, Susan went on to raise money for widows in Afghanistan. Her truly remarkable story was made into a movie, Beyond Belief, which was featured on ABC News and The Oprah Winfrey Show. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know how internet radio goes. We've got a short segment, but anyway, we just wanted to, I'm going to kind of give a little synopsis of your story because we watched your CD. You're on the Grief blog. There's a little excerpt from the CD, and you can also purchase the CD about Susan, but it's a truly remarkable story. You want to give us the quick version, Susan?
Sure. My husband, David, was on American Airlines Flight 11 on September 11th. I had two children. My son, Ben, was just a month shy of turning four. My daughter, Molly, was two. And I was 7 months pregnant with our third child at the time that he was killed. And not long after, well, actually, as soon as he was killed and people, you know, found out, I was overcome by so much help from people, from friends and family in my community to people all over the country and even around the world. People could not do enough to help us. And as soon as I began to lift my head up out of this fog of grief and overwhelming, you know, craziness, I decided that I wanted to try and help other women who were going through,
And so that was a couple of years, wasn't it? How long
my
was
husband
it?
Was killed in 2001, and we formally organized an organization called Beyond the 11th in the fall of 2003, but it took about a year to get it up and running. So it was about a year after he was killed that we formed Beyond
that
the 11th.
That you came out of the fog enough to do that, because I think that's important for our audience to know that they can't expect themselves to jump right into things.
Right. In my own story, I became very manic and could not do enough. So my husband was killed in September. I had a baby in November. I got a puppy in January. People thought I was crazy. I organized a fun run on Father's Day in June. I wrote a children's book, actually, even before that. I went crazy. I could not do enough. And, you know, years of therapy later, I realized I just didn't want to have to stop and think about, really have my thoughts sink in, and so I was just trying to stay busy.
You know, it sounds like Heidi and I had Candy Leitner on that started Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She started it 3 days later, and she says the same thing. She says she felt like she delayed her grief years later looking back at it. But people do great things quickly.
Right. I don't know that I delayed the grief. I just didn't let it all sink in right away.
Right. So you started your foundation, which people can go online to find, right?
Right. It's called beyondthe11th.org, and our mission is to help widows affected by war and terrorism in Afghanistan, because we feel like we are the same victims that these women halfway around the world are. You know, the Taliban ruled them for so many years, and really they were had so few rights. They still have very few rights, and we just felt a connection and wanted to be able to reach out and help them. And we've raised probably in excess of $500,000 and made grants to fabulous organizations doing really good work, helping these women learn income-generating skills so that they can, you know, help themselves and eventually send their children to school, because I am a firm believer that it's through education that, you know, other parts of the country will, well, education in general, which changes people's mindset and will eventually change the world.
That's great.
And your movie is so powerful beyond belief. I would very much recommend that all of our listeners see it. And it shows how much similarity there is between widows, no matter where they live.
Right. And I don't in any way want to make it seem as though my plight is the same as theirs, because,
right,
you know, I live in this beautiful house in a wonderful,
right,
community. My kids got to go to the same schools. And on some level, we couldn't possibly be any different, because
and
these people are some of the poorest in the world.
Right.
Right. But, you know, being a mother is being a mother, and it doesn't matter what country you're born in. And, you know, losing a loved one is the same. It doesn't matter what religion you practice. It is. Our feelings are the same. It's a universal human thing. Mm-hmm. And I hope that does come across in the film.
It certainly does. Now, tell our audience about you. You went on your bike. You went from Ground Zero to Boston to raise money. And eventually, you actually go to Afghanistan. Talk about that a little bit.
We raised money and had given out grants, and then the next part of our journey was to actually go to Afghanistan and see how the money that we raised was being spent. And it was an amazing, life-changing experience to get to meet some of these women and to learn about their lives in more detail, and to be able to truly envision where it is they live and how they work and meet some of their children. And it left me wanting to do more, feeling like we're not doing enough. But it was truly amazing.
Now, were you angry about after 9/11? I mean, what made you decide to get involved with the widows and that kind of thing? Because it was murder, right?
It was. I mean, he was murdered. And of course, I'm angry at the people who murdered him, and, you know, Osama bin Laden and the Taliban and, you know, the true evil people in the world. But I strongly believe that there are so few evil, bad people in the world. That said, they can wreak havoc on large portions of people. But the people of Afghanistan are not bad people. They have been at war for so many years. I can't imagine growing up in a country that's so poor and they have so little. I don't know how you don't grow up being a hard person. And the choices that they have to make are so unlike the choices that we get to make. You know, for example, a woman said to us, you know, we've heard the story that, you know, the Taliban comes and knocks at a family's door and says, "We want your son to come and train with us." Well, the parents, the family isn't like, "Oh, yes, we want to send our child off to train for the Taliban." But in return, they will give them a sack of rice that day and every month thereafter, which will help feed the rest of their children. They also know that the son that they send off will be clothed and will have a warm place to live. So the choices that they make are based on pure necessity. And it's easy for us to say, "Oh, I wouldn't send my son to, you know, fight for the Taliban. That's a horrible organization," blah, blah, blah. But we can say that from the comfort of our warm homes and, you know, our full bellies.
Right.
And I think that that's what we have to keep in mind, is that it's difficult to judge until you, you know, walk a day in that person's shoes.
So let me ask you, Susan, do you feel like doing this has helped you make meaning out of David's death?
I hate that question. I'm not. I mean, I don't know.
Well, what would you tell our audience out there who are widows? What would help?
What would help?
I personally feel, for me, finding something that you feel passionate about, and then fulfilling, you know, trying to find something new and different in your life that will, that brings you meaning. This does bring me meaning, and it has filled me in a way that has helped enable me to move through my grief. That said, I don't think Dave died for a reason. I don't believe that this had to have happened.
Right.
Can good have come from it? Yes. I think that there are certain things that would not have happened. But I certainly wish it never had. I mean,
right.
Oh my goodness. I don't have a good answer.
And the grief process is lifelong because you've got children that are constant reminders and that don't have a dad, and you know, that are constant reminders of the wonderful things that David brought into your life, and also how the sadness that he's no longer here.
Right.
Well, and you have remarried, let me say, and have a new baby, and I want to congratulate you for that and
thank you.
Your new baby. And it's time for us to close this show now, but thank you so much for being on, Sue.
Can I just say one thing?
Uh-huh.
If anybody wants to see the film Beyond Belief, it's available through Netflix, or you can go to my website, which is beyondtheeleventh.org.
Great, and you
very
can also
good.
Get it off the
so
brief
much,
blog.
Susan.
Thank you so
thank
much
you.
For being on, Susan.
All right, take care.
It's time to close our show, and we want to thank our guests for being on the show today. Next week, you can listen to Audrey Stringer, who's author of Getting Over It, Surviving the Grief to Live Again, and Adrienne de Bonvozen, author of The First 30 Days. This is archived on thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. Remember, you need not walk alone, and thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley, Nancy, Becky, and Susan, thank you for helping people all over the world heal after loss.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com. and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.